It's time for Twit. Yes, these wine glasses are here for a reason. I've got three beautiful women co-hosting with me. That's why I need to drink a lot. Dr. Kiki's here, Veronica Belmont, and Sarah Lane. We'll talk about the week's news, privacy, Pinterest, and more. Twit is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android.
Video bandwidth for Twit is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 346, recorded March 25th, 2012. Veronica's Secret Baby. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Ford, featuring Curve Control to help protect against crashes on curves. Look for Curve Control available in the 2013 Ford Taurus and learn more at Ford.com/Taurus. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 30% off your new account for 3 months, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT3. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. And we're continuing because the month of March is the month of women. So we're going to continue what we did last week with another all female panel. And what's nice is every one of these people is a host on Twit. So I really like that. One of these things is not like another. I don't fit this. We thought about having Eileen host the show and me run the board, but then I don't know how to do that.
I don't know if that would have worked.
Yeah. It wouldn't have worked. So I'm just going to stay here.
Well, you're kind of like a catty lady. I'm kind of catty.
That's Sarah Lane, ladies and gentlemen. She is, of course, the host of Tech News Today with Tom Merritt and Iyaz Akhtar and of iPad Today. And a longtime friend I've known for at least a decade now.
More.
Yeah.
Yeah. Been about 11 years.
Since TV.
Well, since we were working together. I think we had met before that.
No. I hadn't met. Because I remember when they talked about hiring you.
Uh-huh.
And you said, because we were at Channel 4. No, I said, we thought you were very expensive. And now at the time, I think it was like, it wasn't very expensive. But it's, at the it time, wasn't. It felt expensive.
Well, people at Tech TV were working for a lot less than that. I'd like to be able to pay my rent.
I don't know if we'd met. I think we passed in the halls, maybe.
Perhaps. Well, because I worked at New Media News, and you did some work for them, too.
Before you.
So maybe I knew of you.
Yeah. Anyway, good to have you, Sarah Lane.
Good to be here.
Also here, Veronica Belmont, who is the host of TechZilla with Mr. Patrick Norton and of Game On with Brian Brushwood. Nice to have you. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll talk about something big that's happening this week.
Yes.
Yes, but we'll mention that in a moment. But I want to also introduce Dr. Kiki.
Hello.
From our own This Week in Science and Dr. Kiki's Science Hour.
Yeah.
Kirsten Sanford, it's good to have you.
Thanks for being here. I'm excited to be here.
And we should say occasionally you'll hear a little sound in the background. That's your son, Kai.
Yes.
Who is a year old?
1 year.
Exactly, almost, right?
A little bit over a year at this point. Yeah.
He's a sweetie.
He's really close to walking.
Is he? Yeah. Is he scooting yet?
Oh, he scoots.
Scooting around?
He scoots. He cruises.
What is scoot?
There are all these phrases for the movement.
He has this really efficient gangster crawl.
Yeah.
That it's this little three-legged thing, and he gets
around. His gangster lean.
Yeah, he gets around really fast.
My little brother used to do the commando.
Yeah.
Arm over arm.
Go like that.
Make it.
Anyway, it's great to have all three of you. So, Veronica, the last Buzz Out Loud is this weekend. Tom and Molly. Mm-hmm. Wow. And Jason are all going to be on
it. We are all going to be
there. The old crew.
It's crazy after, what, like?
400 episodes, right? Something like that?
Gosh, it seems like more. It must be more than that.
It's way more. It's in the 1500s, I think.
Almost at 500.
It's Buzz Out Loud 1,587.
Yeah. Oh, I was right. Yeah, in the 1500s. Yeah.
Wow.
It's the end of an era, for sure. It's been going on for six years.
Well, they went weekly. I don't know, a few months ago, right?
Molly hosting it, right?
With Brian Tong.
And Brian. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the show originally began with Molly and Tom. And was Jason at the beginning?
No, Jason actually
he replaced
was hired
you, kind of.
Long after me, yeah. He came in about a year and a half after I was hired on.
So you were hired not as a host, but as the audio engineer.
Originally,
for the show.
I was an intern.
Intern.
And my boss that I interned for was the producer.
How
and
funny.
He left to go work at Oracle, and I took over at the control panel. And after, I don't know, maybe a couple of months, I started talking on the show. I actually would turn on my own microphone to interject comments.
No!
And yeah, that's kind of how it got started. I became the third host, and
yeah.
And we had a lot of fun doing that show.
Yeah, that's so great. And I'm sad to see it go, but I know that Molly's going on to another show called Always On,
which
launches
looks
in June.
Awesome. She's got a kind of like a little trailer up on YouTube. The show looks really good.
And it's a little bit different. It's like a 30-minute
show. More of a news magazine type
of
news
thing. Magazine. It'll be really interesting.
That's great. We tried to hire Molly. We tried to hire Tom. And she said, no, I'm staying with CBS. And I think that was probably a good choice for her. We've always loved Molly. In fact, she was going to be on TWiT last week, and scheduling didn't allow. She had a
sudden
change.
Yeah, now she's in Spain?
Yeah, she decided to go to Spain instead of doing TWiT. I don't understand that. anyway, she would be here. She's here in spirit, mm-hmm. And that's what matters. So I think you get the lead story because you say you don't watch, you don't follow tech news much anymore, Veronica.
It's hard to stay on top of both tech and gaming.
But
and
this is a gaming tech story.
It is. It's
$180 million for Draw Something.
Yeah,
OMG Pop
was purchased by Zynga for $180 million. And we actually had the last interview with the OMG Pop guys on Game On the day before the buyout was announced. And it's a wonderful app. It's a lot of fun, and there's great people running that company. I'm just a little. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money.
Somebody said, I think a Business Insider. Oh, they left $800 million on the table. It should be worth $1 billion. That seemed a little.
Business Insider also wrote an article like a year ago saying, "Who do these guys think they are? They're trying to compete with Zynga. Best of luck."
They weren't wrong because a year ago, OMG Pop had nothing.
Right.
It wasn't until Draw Something that they had anything.
And exactly. I think they have 35 games or so under
all
their belt.
All of them kind
and
of
this
nothing.
This has been, obviously, the breakout hit.
It just shows you how hard.
I saw some chart somewhere that it was that Draw Something was actually cutting into Zynga's
They knocked them out of the top spot.
Yeah.
And so that's obviously very troubling for a company like Zynga, who, mm-hmm. you know, they make a lot of different kinds of products. They make a lot of products that are very similar to products that already exist out there. So I think
Tiny Tower clones, right. for example.
So for them to take on something that's pretty original in the space, I think.
Is it, though? It's just Pictionary.
It is, but
it's not original at all.
It's not an original idea, but I think please correct me if I'm wrong because I don't play a ton of iOS games, and I know you spend a lot
playing.
Of time looking at that.
Yeah,
but
we have an issue.
It's the first one that's really broken out, I think, in that kind of space that's kind of captured people's hearts and minds.
Well, I think we've talked about it on TNT. Like, why are people so obsessed with this game?
Pass me my iPad, and I'll show people for those who haven't.
Draw Something, but I think it's the perfect game for people who aren't gamers.
What it is.
You don't need to have really any skill at all or feel like you are some sort of savvy game person.
And maybe because it is like Pictionary, maybe because it's something that is familiar, people are drawn to it much more.
And it's really fun.
I have
20 games going on
and
right
you
now.
Don't, and you don't need to be a great artist.
No, I take it very seriously. I'm not a very good artist, but I get very frustrated.
I have seen your Tupac illustration. was good.
So let's let Dan Hendricks, who is our chat moderator, I'm drawing the word model. So let's see. So this is part of why it's successful.
I do a great Tyra Banks as well, by the way.
This is why it's very successful because you get to watch as he tries to figure out what the hell it is. And sometimes I can't help laughing because I'm so bad. I'm such a terrible artist.
Well, the thing that I find really interesting is that
this could be a cello or a person.
Brian Brushwood, for example, he uses it to animate things. So he will use the fact that you can watch it in real time, watch the drawing happen, to use it to animate scenes.
Whoa.
It's like a little mini movie of things happening. I'm like, wow, that's really novel. That's an interesting way of using it.
I did have to illustrate the word apologize or sorry. Mm-hmm. And I did a 4-panel comic strip.
There you go.
And so that, this is the worst drawing of a model. It's either a model or a teapot.
It's
but
a
I mean,
model
you look,
doing,
you
I'm
look
a
at this
teapot.
Game, and it's like, sure, it's fun, but would be really, really easy for Zynga to just have copied it. Yeah. What is this, polka dots?
Yeah, what is going on here?
Okay, and a pleated skirt. Okay.
Haute couture.
Robot made.
Okay, okay. It does look like something from the Jetsons.
Is she supposed to be like an actual model or like a mannequin? Can't tell.
I can't draw.
Leo, this is horrible.
Okay, you can see, folks, why.
Points for using a variety of colors.
Well, wait a minute. Now, give me a break.
I have to say, I got really frustrated
because I was
playing around with Tom Merritt, and he drew something so incomprehensible that every time I go back to it, I can't figure out what it is. I just close the app and start over and play someone else's game.
So you've never finished that game.
He's like, why won't you play my game? And I'm like, because I never once hit pass. I'm not going to now.
This is another very embarrassing thing. She knows it's model, or he knows it's model, but he won't put the L in. He wants to see.
He says, look at that.
The camera good. And the
lights. I think
lights.
It's a giveaway. Like,
oh, that's but why does she have the measles?
So, okay, I'm going to make some hypotheses. First of all, that's one of the reasons it's successful, because of this animation and this kind of... There's a little bit of a fun that's added just by watching somebody.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, because... Now, there are some platforms like the Galaxy Note where you can use a stylus, but basically, you're doing this with a big fat finger. No one is a good artist.
It's not good.
No one is a good artist. Even good artists aren't good artists.
Scott Johnson is a very good draw-something player.
He said he'd play me. Is he good?
He's very good, yeah.
But that's the fun of it, too, is that... Part of the fun is being like, that was the worst drawing I've ever seen, Leo, of a model type thing. Because we're working together. It's not like a competition.
In fact, I've actually had people on the next word write, that was the worst thing I've ever done, and then erase it, and then start.
I've done that.
That's awesome.
Done
that.
You communicate. Because you can draw.
Or if it takes me a really long time, I'll say, what the heck was that? What are you thinking? That was terrible.
Exactly. Yeah. The other thing that I think they did right is the Merv Griffin thing. You know, Merv Griffin is... famous for Wheel of Fortune because he had this brilliant insight that would be a fun game to watch if we designed the game in such a way that the actual players had an incentive not to solve the puzzle. The longer they go, the more they make. But the people at home quickly can solve the puzzle. So it makes the morons watching Wheel of Fortune feel smarter than the people playing it, right?
Right.
And that's why it's successful, because you go, it's waste not, want not, waste not. And they're, I'd like to buy.
Why
are you buying a vowel?
And so you feel good about yourself watching that show. So there's a little bit of the Merv Griffin in there. This is too easy. I mean, it really isn't a hard game. They give you the letters. It's not hard, really, right?
The only functionality I would like to see added, and I think they said they were hoping to do this, is to have a gallery where you can actually save your images.
Because
they just disappear so fast.
Yeah. I've been taking screenshots
real fast.
Like crazy
right.
to use against people later.
Yep.
Because there's no other way to save them.
If you do a search for draw something images, you'll actually see some pretty good images.
Ooh, can I show you Tony Wang? Tony Wang gave me this one. That's Mariah Carey.
Did you guess Mariah Carey?
I had already seen Mariah as an option earlier to draw, so I knew.
Well, that's another
and
thing.
I own that album too.
A fairly small. That's neat to draw. The album art is pretty cool. I've seen people do that. They have a fairly small vocabulary, and I think that's also intentional because the truth is they don't want this to be hard.
Right.
If it's hard, it's no fun. It's like you not doing Tom's puzzle because it's like, I don't know what the hell that is. So they did some things right. I mean, there's no question about it. It really was viral. It's only, 6 weeks old, right?
Yeah.
How many downloads? Millions.
I don't even know if it's 6 weeks.
Millions.
The thing about Zynga is...
Basically, on the strength of one and of 35 applications, they're worth $180 million. That's pretty good.
Hey, Aileen,
and
Zynga
can afford it.
Put it in the notes on the Zynga post.
So you saved your Tupac?
Okay, hold on.
Someone else, Ryan, saved it.
Is there
probably the picture
is there
I'm
a handgun involved?
I don't think there is. I don't...
Nice. Oh, that's horrible.
Is that 1996?
Awesome.
I don't
that
know.
That was good.
Now, I have to say, you obviously spent a lot of time on that.
I did. I spent a lot of time on
that. Did you erase it all? I mean, the Tupac himself, you put a lot of energy into that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I race them, and I start over, and I keep going, and I make the best I can possibly.
It's a masterpiece. I want to start playing you.
Yeah, I've got 40 games going right
now. So you know,
you're not going to like mine.
You know who's playing this game?
Who?
Nathan Fillion.
Oh, sweet.
You want to see his...
Holy moly, no way.
What?
Wow.
Okay, so, another...
That's on an iPhone screen.
Another reason to hate him, by the way.
Well, not necessarily.
Oh, wait a minute. No, he didn't draw it.
Someone else drew it for him.
He didn't draw it. I'll draw something with this guy. Tweet me, bud. I know your handle. Let's do this.
Wow. That's really, really...
So somebody else drew that. Because, what are the chances Nathan Fillion would get Firefly as a clue. Is that the Firefly?
I think someone just sent it to him.
Somebody drew me, Colin.
Oh, wow.
Brandon W. Somebody drew drew my album art.
For science.
Dr. Kiki's This Hour.
And you guessed science?
Well, I mean,
it was Colin.
Fill in the blank of your own show.
That's pretty good.
What could it be?
No, I love Nathan Fillion. I'm just jealous of Nathan Fillion. He's got everything I ever wanted. His own ship. No, I'm just kidding.
Zynga has a history of buying properties. They did this with Words with Friends. They bought that in 2010.
And they've converted that one.
They
look at the graph.
They doubled their user base in like 6 months.
Did they?
And it was already a very successful program. Yeah. So it's like, this makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. Draw Something, you know, might not be as popular as it is right now in a year, but for this year, Zynga can promote all their other games. They can introduce little in-app buying stuff.
And they might convert people who've come in to Draw Something who haven't tried other games. They might convert them into more gameplay.
Yeah.
Do you think it's at all suspicious that Mark Pincus, the founder and head of Zynga, is selling 15% of his stock? Or is that just, I want to cash in, I want to get a little money, and he's $227 million worth of stock.
I can imagine that they probably don't mind a little payout from this.
All right.
Right.
Sometimes it's seen when a officer sells a big chunk, and 15% is a big chunk, it's seen as a lack of faith.
But it's not really that huge, though. If you look at his voting power.
He still has a lot of control.
His control only goes down less than 1%.
1%, you're right.
So it's
0.4%.
So
yeah, he's
15% of his
shots.
Stock. He's still pretty much in charge.
Yeah,
just with more money.
Yeah.
So this may be cause for concern. Its top three games accounted for 83% of its revenue in 2009, 78% of its revenue in 2010, but 57% in 2011. So they are getting more diversified.
Mm-hmm. And smart because people get tired of games pretty quickly.
Right.
You know.
How long? I mean, I'm kind of done with Draw Something. Are you done?
I just have so many games, I can't even get around to opening up the app because I just panic.
What's your...
I just have a panic attack.
It's that damn Tom Merritt. he's really screwed it up for
complex.
You.
Yeah. It's like my one uncompleted game that I can't move past on. So, yeah. But I think it was smart for them. I just hope they don't change it too much, change it for the worst. I think that's always the initial fear that fans of a game have when someone like Zynga.
They did it with Words with Friends. They kind of got a little bit greedy. For instance, they added features that you could buy, how many tiles were left in each letter and all of that stuff, which kind of spoils the game a little bit. And it was just a way to make money, obviously.
I'm sure they'll add some, you know, microtransactions to to pop as well.
Well, it turns out that's how you make money. You give away the game and you do in-game transactions. That's where all the money is in all of these games now.
Oh, yeah.
Which is good because it gives us a free taste of everything. And then you can decide if you want to buy the fish or not. We're going to take a break. We've got lots more with our great panel. Dr. Kiki, Kirsten Sanford is here. Veronica Belmont is here. Sarah Lane. So nice to have all three of you. I just feel like... the bump on a log or something here.
What are you talking about?
What does that even mean?
I don't know what that means.
What does that mean?
That doesn't mean anything. Don't try to analyze it too deeply. We're brought to you today by Ford. There's a new book about Alan Mulally that I've got to get. Is it American Icon? It's about, I think that's the name of it, about him as CEO coming into this company. Essentially, a company that was... a little bit on the rocks, let's face it. They were solvent, but tough times are ahead for the American car industry. That was very obvious. He was an engineer, came from Boeing, and really had an engineer's focus on the business. He structured it in such a way that they never had to take a handout. They took no funds from the American government. They were the only one of the big three not to take money. Immediately kind of changed Ford's manufacturing, focused on technology, and boy, what a result. They've done such a great job. They've made Ford cars among the most reliable, among the most high-tech. They've done such a great job. And I think a lot of credit, I mean, it's a great company, and I know Alan would be mad at me if I said a lot of credit goes to Alan Mulally, but he really is quite an impressive guy. And one of the things he brought to the company, here's a guy who designed the 777 cockpit, the 767 cockpit. All of the current Boeing cockpits were under his watch. And now you take a look at what they're doing with Fords, and you can see the same kind of eye to technology in the new Ford vehicles, all the technology inside. And also, and I've asked him about autonomous vehicles. He said, no, people want to drive their own car. But what he did point out to me, he said, in aviation, what we do is, you always have a pilot, but you add technology to help the pilot fly more safely, to fly better, and that's exactly what they're doing. Take a look at the 2013 Ford Taurus, for example, and the curve control. The car computer, 100 times a second, looks at roll rate, yaw rate, acceleration, lateral acceleration, wheel speed, steering angle. It's trying to figure out at all times, are you trying to turn the car faster than it can physically turn? Because if you do, it'll break free, you'll lose control. And when it does happen, when the curve control, and it's very subtle, you're not going to feel something happen, but when it does happen, the curve control immediately changes parameters to make it safe. It reduces engine torque. They can apply four-wheel braking if need be. In fact, they have the capability of slowing the car down 10 miles per hour per second, which is quite a bit if you think about it. Yeah. That means from 0 to 70 in 7 seconds. That's a big difference, or 70 to 0, I should say. And it works on wetter drive pavement. I mean, this is really sophisticated stuff. And yet you won't even know it's operating, except that you have complete control on the curves. There's a good video on the site. If you go to Ford.com/car/Taurus, I can never find this. It's here somewhere, of a car cornering with and without curve control. And significant, significant difference. You'll find it here. Ford.com/cars/Taurus. It's part of what makes the new Ford vehicles so amazing. And I invite you to drive one at a Ford dealer near you. Ford.com/car/Taurus to find out more. I want to find, where do you know where that video is? Because we played it once, didn't we?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah. Oh, well.
But that was Chad playing.
Chad knows where to find everything on here.
Chad can find everything.
Yeah. I drove
Is there a Chad-Eileen rivalry?
Oh.
Of some kind?
Not at all.
His hair is a lot.
Like, no.
She's like,
his hair is a lot redder. Thank
He's
you,
definitely
Ford.
Better than me.
Thank you for your support. Speaking of buybacks, Apple made some big decisions, big announcements this week. I love Guy. What's Guy doing? He's having fun.
He's having fun. He's laughing.
He's going to be. I think he's going to be on. He's going to be on Game On tonight. He's going to be on the LAN party.
Oh, he is.
Yeah. I think
oh,
so.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're getting him started young.
What are you playing in the LAN party?
Playing some
today?
Team Fortress 2. Tonight.
Oh yeah, he's great at that. I think
he's a pyro.
Yeah.
I can tell.
Really? I thought more like a sniper, a camper.
A sniper? He's an assassin.
Yeah. Yeah, he likes to camp and snipe.
He's an assassin.
He wants to make a little appearance.
Sneaky. Yeah.
Sneaky assassin child.
There you go.
He's the Stewie there Griffin of Twit, actually.
I'm so glad I didn't wear the same hat.
I know.
It would have been
I know. You know. Keep going. Keep going. Keep going. Keep going.
Keep coming in.
Keep going.
Babies in space.
Hi.
Oh, you're never getting rid of him. You're never getting rid of him.
Hi.
Oh, he's so sweet. Hi. So he really is the Twit baby because we watch.
Dividends for the baby.
He does say hi.
Yeah.
Hi.
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 No, he's like,
where's
Ozzy?
Where's my baby?
I know. I forgot the dog just for you. So Apple had a analyst call last week. I loved how they announced. They announced it. We had it on. In fact, it was Ryan, I think, who announced it on Gadget.
Mm-hmm.
And we broke it on Twit that because it happened Sunday, the following day, Monday.
At 6 a.m.
Yeah. 6 a.m., a little early for us, 9 a.m. East Coast time, they had a call and they said, we got $100 billion in cash and we are going to do a dividend. I think everybody thought that that's what, I mean, there was some speculation. I thought maybe they'd buy Sweden, which I thought would have been cool, but no.
Isn't it like Greenland or Iceland?
Is it for sale?
Yeah.
Because Iceland,
they're in debt.
Iceland's in deep trouble. Yeah.
Iceland's in trouble. Yeah.
Maybe they'd be cheap right now.
Exactly.
Yeah. they're going to both do a dividend, a $2.65 per share dividend. That's about a yield of about 1.8%. So it's not a huge amount of money. Intel 3%, Microsoft 2.5%, Texas Instruments 2.1%. So Apple, which has never wanted to do a dividend, is still being kind of.
But this
chintzy.
Is good for people who own stock, right?
Well, yeah, and you know, if
well,
you're,
but it's sort of like a savings account, right? I mean, it's mm-hmm. there's kind of some interest if coming back to
Apple
but not
doesn't
much.
Have
not
to
much.
Talk anybody into buying their stock. That's right. The real point.
It's
here.
It's that none of us can afford it now. Really.
Yeah, it costs more to buy a share than it does to buy an iPad. So I bought the iPad.
So the take-home message for most people who don't have Apple stock is that it's not affecting you at all.
No,
nothing to see
this,
here.
This story.
Move along. They are going to do a stock buyback, which, again, another thing that doesn't really – usually is done by a company that wants to say, we have confidence. Yeah, Apple doesn't need to say that. I think everybody knows Apple's going to do just fine.
Yeah, but it's the kind of thing where if you've been, you know, for years and years and years just, like, cutting the stock – portions and making them smaller and smaller and smaller so that you can get more stock out there, your market ends up a little bit diluted. And if they can make it less
rein some of it back in,
it's just going to
that's the issue.
Just help it out a little.
That's the issue. So they're giving all these options to new employees and things like that. It is tempting to say, oh, Apple could buy, you know, the record industry or something. But, you know, if you think about the history of big tech acquisitions, AOL, you know, Time Warner buying AOL or HP buying Compaq, they've all been terrible. Mm-hmm. They've all been bad for the company. They've not, no good result. You have to think it's probably Apple's probably showing some good sense in not trying to buy something and just giving a little back. Keeping a little in the bank.
Wasn't the dividend announcement the same day, later in the day, when they announced that they had sold 3 million iPads in as many days?
Yeah, they kind of almost had to.
It was like it was a two-announcement day type thing.
Yeah, exactly. Later that day, they said 3 million iPads in the first
weekend. Oh, by the way. Yeah, I would say.
We're kind of doing okay. We're really a great company. Okay.
A lot of attention on the overheating. We talked about it on iPad today, and we kind of poo-pooed it. Consumer Reports.
It's just not an issue.
Yeah.
Unless it's. I'm not saying that there aren't isolated incidents where people are holding uncomfortably hot iPads. Leo and I can't replicate the problem.
I can't make mine hot.
No.
Apparently, it's about 10 degrees warmer than the iPad 2, right in that corner where the A5 chip is. But not, you know, in fact, this is where I think it's, you know, a lot of times I'm now seeing headlines. It's like these companies, even Consumer Reports, the staid Consumer Reports, is hiring somebody to write attention-grabbing headlines that will drive
new
traffic.
iPad 116 degrees, and people go, "Oh my gosh,
that sounds hot!"
But that's and how not, long they don't say how long it was at 116 degrees. They don't say exactly what
you had to have it plugged in and playing Infinity Blade for 45 minutes.
You don't mean Jackie's title, right? Because that's not
I mean Consumer Reports.
Okay, they had a
Consumer Reports said 116 degrees,
which and I think there was even like an exclamation point. You know, so you go,
yeah, maybe
you
leave it out by the pool, like in the direct sun. And start using it immediately after. But
so I don't want to be an Apple apologist by any means. If it's too hot, it's too hot. But I don't think it is too hot.
The situation is, though, I mean, I think with their products, they're trying to pack as much stuff as they can into a very small space. And if you ever open anything like an iPad or an iPhone up, you just see everything just packed in. And it's you put a bigger processor or a faster processor in that same small space or even a smaller amount of space with your design. It's physics. The heat has to dissipate somewhere, and it has to go get out somehow. And so, yeah, you're probably going to have a slightly hotter machine than the previous version.
And it is a little warmer than the iPad 2. I have noticed.
You have noticed it?
Yeah, I've noticed warmth. Not even heat, but certainly if the two are next to each other, iPad 2 really never got warm at all. This gets a little bit warm. But, again, not even uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. I just wonder from like a... from a health perspective, like laptops, the batteries get and the processor get very hot, and there is
maybe not leave it on your lap.
There is actually a physiological response.
It's bad for your sperm count.
bad for your sperm count.
Is that where you were going?
That was not where I was going. But
that's where I was going.
It could be bad for your sperm count.
It just maybe that's something I'm more concerned about than others. But
I think your laptop's going to run hotter.
I was going to talk about discoloration of your skin because
that's not good, and it
happens more often in women than it does in men. But people who spend
you get
time
like a laptop burn?
Yes. Your skin is basically
Tom Merritt
cooked.
Had this once.
No.
He told me about it. He said he didn't, you know, he's like, am I eating something I'm allergic to or whatever? You know,
you
like the tops of my legs. And they couldn't figure it out. And finally it was like, the doctor's like,
I've never
that's
really checked
what
before.
It is.
I can confirm that. Okay, like, oh. That's true. I can confirm
right.
that.
Eileen knows more about the story than me, obviously.
We thought he had a problem, but a laptop.
Does it look like a rash? Is it red or what?
Yeah, it's red. It looks like a rash.
It's like a rash.
Yeah.
Looks like a rash.
Wow. Huh. So it's a real thing.
It's a real thing. So as we have these devices that we're coming in contact with our bodies, your laptops you hold in your lap, iPad, you don't really do that so much. But, you know, there could potentially be some kind of heat-related reaction.
Scotland calling in our chat room says, that we call that granny rash.
And my granny rash.
My granny used to get that sitting next to the fire. So it actually is a true thing. They've known about it in Scotland for a long time.
Finally, an accent you really have command of.
You have a good Scottish accent.
Impressive.
This just in, James Cameron tweeting from the bottom of the ocean.
This is so cool.
Yeah, tell me what's going on.
Just arrived at the ocean's deepest point. Wow. Hitting bottom, never felt so good. He's tweeting from the deepest point of the ocean. Can't wait to share what I'm seeing with you.
How is he tweeting?
That's a good question. He's in a submersible, Kirsten?
Yeah, they're doing...
Breaching down there?
Doing submersibles. It's like this competition or this challenge that a few people are a part of to get
probably
to the
satellite
deepest...
Internet.
Yeah, to get to the deepest points in the ocean, because the ocean is still really one of the most unexplored places on the Earth. We don't know so much of what's down there. And, you know, we go to space a lot more than we go into the oceans. And so it's this whole movement to try and explore and get to the deepest point. And, you know, it's kind of, it's a rich man's game, of course, but it's going to push technology forward in developing these submersibles that can withstand the pressures that are down there.
So he just literally did this half an hour ago.
It's amazing. I love technology. This is so cool that we're finding out about it right now.
Well, what's also interesting is it's solo.
Yeah.
He's on his own.
Yeah. Wow. He's a little man in a tuna can at the bottom of the sea.
I'm claustrophobic just thinking about it.
I know.
When you fly in a jet, you typically fly 35,000 feet in the air, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's how deep he is. 35,000 756 feet or 10,898 meters.
And he's shooting all this, right?
He's shooting it in 3D. Which is kind of a shame.
Well, he had a 3D IMAX movie a few years ago. It was a documentary of some kind.
Was it the Titanic?
No. It was a real movie about the deep sea. And I was covering it for, I guess it was G4 or something, but... had the chance to interview him. And, I mean, he is obsessed with the ocean.
You know, it's kind of neat.
In a really cool way.
This guy is a filmmaker.
He really wants to learn more about it.
He doesn't need to risk his life and limb and spend, I'm sure, millions of dollars to do this. And the fact that he is, I think it's kind of admirable. So it's a cockpit, they say, according to the National Geographic, as cramped as any Apollo capsule. Mm-hmm. He's investigating a seascape more alien to humans than the moon. He's only the third person to reach this Pacific Ocean Valley southwest of Guam, and he's the first to do it solo.
He's an adventurer.
He'll spend 6 hours down there. At that point, he'll jettison steel weights attached to the sub and shoot back to the surface, which sounds dangerous.
Yes.
Can't you get the bends?
He's in a pressurized container.
Right. Yeah.
His ears, though, still.
Pop, pop, pop.
A lot of popping. Hold your nose.
And he, you know,
35,000 foot elevator to the...
Is it connected? It must be connected to the surface.
That's what I would guess. And I would imagine that he's got some kind of cable.
That's
got to be an emergency.
Yeah, that's how he's tweeting.
That he's probably got air. Probably some in there, but maybe...
There's air, yes.
They say the chat room is saying he's at one atmosphere, so his ears, in fact, won't pop. It's so well pressurized.
So well pressurized. The chat room is so smart.
Well, but I mean, your ears pop in a jet. I mean, they're pressurized as well. Wow, that is very cool. 6.77 miles long cable.
Mm-hmm.
I'm jealous. I would do it. I think I would not. You would not do
no.
it? I would do it.
I want you to tell me all about it when you get back,
but I'm
not going down there.
Even knowing that I might be crushed to the size of a thimble.
In less than a second.
I am getting little breathing
But you wouldn't because they send other things. They test the equipment and everything they're using before the person actually gets in it to go down.
Oh, yeah. So it works fine until it breaks.
Yeah.
Right?
You think that they try and test it, troubleshoot.
They can't do live tests, you know.
So you put a teddy bear in there and you send it down and you bring it back up and it's fine. You go
or
okay.
Like the Russians did. You put
a dog
in it.
No.
Yeah, that's too far. Too
this
dark.
Is, this is actually too the cold. Test. Instead of putting real scientists in, they're putting James Cameron.
Oh, that's true. A film director is actually probably less controversial than a dog.
We'll see how the rich director handles it.
If you sent a dog down there, the Humane Society would be upset. But you sent a director, no big deal. It's nobody cares.
And then they have all the great footage to see exactly what happened, what went wrong.
Do you want to know what his last words were before his descent?
It's dark.
Help me.
Release, 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 release.
I did not consent to this.
So he's been working in secret to design and build this craft with his team. It weighs 11 tons, 7 meters long. That's 23 feet. It's a he says it's a vertical torpedo.
Is there leather seats inside?
You gotta believe he's
I want to know.
He's got some nice seat warmer. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is a little massage.
The technology package built in.
It is very much like a space journey, though, isn't it?
Yeah, really? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The technology that's involved in going to the bottom of the ocean is very similar to the technology that's involved in going to the moon.
Wouldn't it? I mean, the only difference is Neil Armstrong couldn't tweet.
Mm-hmm. But have you seen recently, I mean, tweeting and videos from the International Space Station? I've been watching stuff. Don Pettit, an astronaut on the International Space Station, is doing like weekly videos, physics and demonstrations. It's the most... Now we have tweeting and video.
You know, though,
the
first response on Twitter is twit pick or it didn't happen. I mean, this is what's...
This is the age we live in.
This is what's so sad about...
I just think it's fantastic. I mean, I've been watching everything NASA's been doing on Google Plus and the amount of conversation they're having with people and people who are interested in learning more about science and space travel. And even this, I mean, we're able to have a conversation with someone in almost real time who is living this at this moment.
It's
and I think that's just
truly
that we
amazing.
Live now and are able to do this is fantastic.
Yeah. I'm really enjoying... I'm enjoying on Twitter. This is sort of getting passed around on the groups of people that I follow and some people who are... not familiar with the fact that James Cameron really likes the ocean is like, wait, what?
Yeah. James Cameron?
James Cameron, the Titanic,
the Titanic guy
is at the bottom
but remember,
of the ocean.
He did Abyss, and I think he became interested in all of this because Abyss was shot mostly, I think a lot of it was shot underwater, and I think he became interested in this as a result of that.
Very cool.
That was such a great movie.
Yeah, I loved that movie.
Love that movie.
Yeah, I have to watch it again. So that wasn't actually in our rundown, but it just happened. Some breaking news. I love that.
And I was gonna say, I think the really interesting point is that the breaking news, the live viewing or watching it happen, unfold on Twitter, it's so neat. Once upon a time, explorers did things alone, and now they're alone, but they're connected to the entire world. And so it's like you've got humanity
at
your back.
I completely agree. The first person to climb Everest, we didn't learn about it for months because he had to come back, he had to... talk about it, and we're now watching this happen live. It's just amazing. Amazing.
Also, does it say something about our age that we all call him the Titanic guy and not the Avatar guy?
Not the Avatar guy.
Yeah. No, that's interesting.
Seriously.
I don't think it says anything about the age. You know, April 12th is the 100th anniversary of the Titanic sinking.
They're going to start showing the movie in
3D.
3D, like IMAX.
Oh, I'm so
And I
sad.
Have a really cool science story related to the Titanic that is, to me, I thought it was going to be complete hokum bunk pseudoscience, but it's actually really possibly true that the moon and the sun had an influence on the wreck of the Titanic.
No.
Yes.
How?
Okay, so here's how it worked. At that particular time, for some reason, not some reason, but that particular time, we just happened to be right in between the sun and the moon at the closest, and the moon was the closest that it had ever been before. So tides were higher.
It was a perigee.
Yeah. So it was, and it's something, it's like
higher tides. That makes sense.
The closest that the moon was in some, like over 1,000 years or something. It was like a really close orbit that year. And additionally, we were closer to the sun as well. So the gravitational pull, the sun and the moon, we had incredibly high tides. And so when the tides go out in the northern areas where there are icebergs, you know, icebergs have the majority of their ice beneath the surface. Mm. A lot of them get grounded. And so a lot of icebergs just kind of sit. They're on the ground. The high tides, super high tides, probably lifted a larger than normal number of icebergs and brought them back into the shipping lanes. Mm. And so because of the movement of the sun and the moon and the planet and the tides, there was a higher probability of the Titanic wrecking.
Wow.
And of course, the people who had figured out their path weren't thinking about this.
We're thinking about
no.
this.
Captain
we're
Smith,
good. We're good.
Captain
yeah.
Smith. I know. I saw the
movie.
He said, let's go faster. I saw the movie. In 19 days, it'll be the 100th anniversary of that real sea tragedy. And just fascinating. Let's take a break. Come back with more. Great panel here. I think we should talk about Facebook and Pinterest.
Okay.
For the ladies. But
first, I don't even pin anything.
Do you not pin anything?
No, I do.
Pin.
You're a pinner.
I'm a pinner.
Yeah. You're a pinner? No.
I use it.
I was never a South African.
I think Veronica and I pin more than anybody.
You think so? I don't pin that much, but I do.
Oh, maybe I'm the big pinner here. I love to pin.
That's what we can call you from now on.
Pinner?
The big pinner.
The big pinner. I like it. You know what a pin is? A pinner is. It's this very small joint.
Nope.
Well, how would we know anything about that?
I never heard that before.
Maybe it's just my era. Squarespace.com, the secret behind exceptional websites. Everything you need to create an exceptional website waiting for you right now. If you go to squarespace.com, what I love about this, I think this is so great. Almost all our advertisers do this. Even Ford, for that matter, lets you test drive a car. They have such confidence in their product. They say, come on, just go to squarespace.com and click that try it free button. You don't need to give us a credit card or any identifying information, just a name, a password, an email address, just so we can let you know when the 2-week trial is over. That's it. And you get full access to everything Squarespace can do. In fact, they've really done some amazing new things. They've got 13 new template redesigns, 85 new style options, 2 brand new templates. So, you know, one of the nice things is the content is there. You press a button, you've got a new look to your site. Completely customizable. If you know CSS and JavaScript, the sky's the limit, but you don't have to. They also have the Google Web Font Library. That's 300-plus fonts, so you can make your site really look unique and beautiful. They have now these workshops. If you go to somebody was telling me this in the chat room earlier today, workshops.squarespace.com. I think this is a really good, I wish more companies would do this. Free workshops so you can learn how to create, not only just Squarespace, but how to create a better site, search engine optimization. If you are a photographer or an artist, how to build a portfolio. Things like sophisticated stuff like the members and the audiences feature of Squarespace, which allows you to have different parts of a site for different teams or different audiences. This is just one of the ways Squarespace is unique. The best hosting ever. You cannot bring a Squarespace site down. And that's saying a lot because we've tried. You know, we can bring any site down. This Twit Army, if I mention a site, we did it today. Guy calls the radio show and wants to talk about his site, which was a great idea. We broke it instantly. And I said, dude, you better go on to Squarespace. Squarespace.com. Here's the deal. If you decide this is for you, and I totally build this site, you know, get to know Squarespace. You get the hosting plus all the software for as little as $12 a month. But if you use our offer code TWIT3, you'll get 30% off your new account for 3 months. So there's an even bigger incentive to give Squarespace a try. Squarespace.com. Try it today. If you decide to buy, just write this down. TWIT3 is the offer code and 30% off for 3 months. Really just a great site. Facebook says, thank you, Squarespace. Facebook says it may sue employers who demand, I think this is really interesting, applicants' passwords. So when you apply for a job occasionally, often with government jobs or law enforcement jobs, they will say to you, I want to know everything about you, including you must give me your password to Facebook.
How is that okay?
Well,
I know there's senators fighting to make it not okay.
Right, but it is legal at this point.
But I don't even understand how someone can
Of course it is. Because if you don't want to do it, you just say, I guess I don't want that job.
I guess I don't have that job, yeah.
Okay, well, there's that aspect, but I thought in HR departments, you're not allowed to ask somebody what religion they are. You're not allowed to ask all sorts
you can't
of
ask the age.
Questions.
I can't, if I hire somebody, I can't ask them how old they are, right. But I can get their Facebook
password. But if
password.
You were to find out their age through
sense.
Other means... And it can't be proven that that's why they didn't get the job. That's the issue,
but
right?
But you can Google. You can search for somebody on Google, search for them on Facebook. If they haven't blocked or set their restrictions.
And I'm
properly.
Sure that happens every single time you apply for a job.
You see people who don't know how to use.
How
the
is
stuff.
This different from asking for their email password?
Right. That actually was happening in Montana until about a year ago.
That is insane.
For government employees. They wanted the job, and, you know, in this market, people need jobs, and so they might be less likely to say, no, that's unreasonable. I'm not doing this.
And at that point, what are they even looking for? Are they looking for
evidence of drug or abuse? Alcohol abuse?
Yeah. Any crime.
That is such baloney.
Naked pictures? I don't know.
I mean, these are the sorts of jobs, at least right now, 911 dispatchers, police officers, the kind of jobs where they would be a very, very thorough background check anyway. That's something that historically has always happened.
It sure would save time in the background
check,
right? You know, I mean, it's all
that
there.
That said, background checks don't include, like, here are the keys to my house, go rifle through my underwear drawer, which is that's what this feels like to me.
Mm-hmm. It absolutely is.
Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut is drafting legislation that would outlaw the practice of employers asking for login credentials to social networking sites and email accounts. So that proves, yes, it is happening. But Facebook says, and this is even more to the point,
it's
not
PR.
Only are you revealing your information, but because of your friends, you're revealing your friends' information when you do this. And this is where Facebook says, wait a minute, you don't have the right to hand over this information.
Facebook, the privacy gatekeepers.
It's very strange, yes. But they're even telling people, they're saying, don't hand over your passwords to employers if they ask you. Like, just say no, don't do this.
Facebook says that it's technically against their terms of service.
It is.
Right.
To
is.
Even
Absolutely.
Share your password with anybody. Yeah. And Facebook saying, listen, employers, think about this. If I demand that Kiki gives me her password so that I hire her, and then I look through her private Facebook account and realize that she's maybe part of a religious organization that I don't agree with, and she can somehow prove that that's why I didn't hire her, now I'm in hot water. Facebook's like, this is not a good idea, employers. You're going to be facing legal action.
Well, Facebook is actually, what they could do is say, if the employers are using Facebook in order to access this content, they are using someone else's password in order to log in, not as, you know, without being that user.
Right.
So it's almost like stealing their password. It's almost like phishing.
Yeah.
It's like in a very weird way.
It is phishing. You want the
job. Social engineering. It's social engineering to take someone's password and therefore, you know, get into their private information.
It's reprehensible. Web9 says, well, why couldn't you just say, I don't have a Facebook account?
You could make a dummy one
and
point them to the account that makes you look like Pollyanna. But that people shouldn't have to do that.
That's actually my advice.
And it probably won't work really well now that they're rolling out timelines. You can't do that because a fake account.
Hey, wait a second. What? You've only been on Facebook for a week.
This
doesn't
no
add
history.
Up. You're a social media expert.
I think absolutely the biggest thing is what Sarah said is that if they dug into someone's profile and decided not to hire them, there's no way knowing what in that profile cause them to not hire.
Could be their age.
There's a lot of discrimination.
Right. They could say,
that would be
discrimination. We just decided not to hire you. Oh, is it because I'm, a Mormon? Or is it because I'm a Catholic? Is it because, I've written stuff about my
is it because
political
I'm pregnant?
Beliefs?
I'm not. Mm-hmm. But if I were, that's the sort of thing I might choose not to share with a prospective employer.
Exactly.
Facebook says, we're not going to sue anybody. We don't have any immediate plans to take legal action. We look forward to engaging with policymakers and other stakeholders. See, this to me, it's a little bit them talking out of both sides of their mouth, though, because I don't think really Facebook cares about privacy. They want you to think
you're
private.
It's a marketing PR stunt.
It's marketing.
They go out and they say, we are going to
protect
fight for you for your privacy. We're going to protect you. Exactly.
Yeah.
Aren't we taking care of you? You love us. And, they get on your good side that way, and then they can do whatever they want.
I wonder how much this is happening.
Is
it happening a lot, or is this one of those things where somebody noticed, Sheryl Sandberg said, hey, we ought to make a big press release on this.
Does it matter?
I guess not. Two senators are asking the attorney general to investigate employers. Chuck Schumer and Richard Blumenthal, previously mentioned, have asked that Eric Holder investigate these claims. They think it might violate the Stored Communications Act or the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. This is good for everybody to know. The SCA gives Fourth Amendment protection to online communications so that you have the right against illegal search and seizure. It has to be due process. You're right. I think this is marketing because I don't think Facebook cares.
It'd be great if they went through with it, though. I think it would be great.
If they actually did, it would be great.
Yeah. Our own Senator Leland Yee is also, trying to put a ban into effect on this practice.
What state are you in?
In California.
Your senator is Leland Yee?
Yeah. He's a Democrat of California.
Oh, he's not he's a state senator.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He's still a senator.
I'm pretty sure it's... Oh, Leland, your senator. He's not my senator. I have another senator.
Okay.
I think.
And you do live in California,
yeah.
Right? Okay.
I got Boxer and Feinstein, I think.
No, yeah, there's senators.
There too?
Yeah, but he's yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Just checking.
Politics.
What senator would that be? Yahoo reportedly has a license to patents Facebook bought from IBM. I can't follow this story. Would you explain this to me, Sarah Lane? You've been following this.
Well,
Facebook, Yahoo says we invented social media, so we're suing Facebook.
Yahoo's going on the it's the desperation card, which
they
is
got
the,
nothing.
That's the card that Yahoo is playing.
They got
now.
Nothing.
They have quite a patent portfolio. Facebook is in their quiet period pre-IPO. Facebook has a history of pulling out the patent card with Google right before Google IPO'd some years
You're
ago.
You're kidding. They did the same thing.
They sure did, and they settled. They got a bunch of money from Google. So this is like people... there are a lot of people saying, oh, Yahoo, wow, so pathetic. It's like, hey, this isn't the first time that Yahoo's done this, and it's certainly not the first time that other companies have done this. You know, they're not the only company that's relying on a healthy patent portfolio to get some cash. But what's weird about it is Facebook buying patents. Facebook doesn't actually have rights to very many patents relative to other companies of its size. I think they only have about 65 before this purchase. Got a bunch of patents that Facebook, or I'm sorry, that
From
Yahoo
IBM.
Is already licensing.
So they're not going to get, this is not ammunition then. This is a waste of time.
It might be ammunition. We don't know enough about the patents to know if Facebook could then say, hey, guess what?
We cancel
that
license.
You owe us twice as much.
Yeah.
Or this is not going to remain anymore. There are a lot of laws in place for stuff like this that prevent companies from buying patents than to say, hey, you know, company B.
They can't do that.
They can't do that legally. But again, these sorts of patents are just, you know, there's so many gray areas. Every patent needs to be treated differently. And there's such subtle nuances in the wording of things. We don't know enough about it to know why Facebook is doing this, but you can bet that they think that they can screw over Yahoo or at least get Yahoo to back off.
Probably just get them to back off with a threat. So it's kind of like the United States and Russia with nuclear bombs during the Cold War. We both have the bomb, but, you know, I'm not going to shoot mine at you if you don't shoot yours at
me. It just makes me sad. We spend so much money and time on this, and it doesn't add productivity, doesn't innovate, doesn't do anything. It's just throwing...
Money at lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
You're passing money back and forth. Mm-hmm. It's so weird.
We got to change this. So you're a fashionista.
I just like clothes.
Because you've had a tumble log for a long time on fashion.
I have, yeah. The Lady Likes.
And I follow you there because I think you have such great ideas for
I've
shoes.
Almost stopped kind of using it, though.
Now you do Pinterest.
I'm doing everything on Pinterest now. Yeah.
See, to me, this is kind of, I think it is Tumblr, isn't it? Isn't it kind of the same?
I like it better. I like the boards. I like having different, because I like to see everything laid out in one spot.
The layout.
The layout is really nice. I think it's very easy to share and to and look at ideas and see what other people are posting.
So here's an example of something you liked. I could repin it, on, mm-hmm. which is just the same as resharing on Tumblr.
Correct.
I could like it, same mm-hmm. thing. And then there's commenting, very similar to Tumblr. So you have a conversation going on mm-hmm. with Tracy and Anne about this dress. So this is very much like Tumblr in that respect.
It is.
It's just
But I think the discovery mechanism is a lot easier on Pinterest than it is on Tumblr.
Now they changed their terms of service. So because they've been getting people, I don't know who would complain, but apparently some people have complained that their images are being used without permission.
And I can definitely see that as being a problem. I can see, I wondered when the site first launched, when that would start becoming a problem.
Are there original permalinks not attached to these?
No, they all go through exactly where they're supposed to.
So I don't really see what the big issue is.
Well, let's say it's a Flickr photo that isn't licensed, that's copyrighted.
Right.
And I repost it here.
Because I'm not necessarily going to click back to that original image. That's
and
what
I don't
the
think,
people
mm-hmm. I don't, they're not using hot linking, which is good. But I think that they are, you know, they're saving the images on some kind of server of their own. Mm-hmm. So
You have to cache it. I mean, that's just how it works. N5GM in our chat room says Pinterest is stripping out metadata copyright info. Mm-hmm. That would be a bad thing
to
do.
That's definitely a good reason to be a little
Now, does
upset.
It bother you that Pinterest, if you don't put an affiliate code in these shoes, will add one so that if somebody buys these shoes, Pinterest makes money on it? That doesn't bother me. Does it bother you?
It would. I wouldn't mind getting a little back from that, right. too.
You could
know?
If
that
you would
nice.
Put if you would put your affiliate code in here. They're not taking it out.
You know, like an Amazon associate kind
But you'd
of
like
code?
Them to help you do it.
Well,
would that work?
Can a single link have two affiliate codes? I think
don't
the Pinterest would override whatever I added in there.
No, so what they do is they use a service that skims the links. If there isn't an affiliate code, it puts one in.
Really? Well, then I would have to put it into my own kind of store in order for it to generate that affiliate code. If I'm just taking these images from the website that they originate from.
If you're just using the repin bookmark, you'd have to do it yourself.
Like if I had a store on, if I used the Sword and Laser store and I was pinning things from there, then my Amazon affiliate link would work potentially through Pinterest. But since all of these are coming from other, you know, third-party sites. I don't have any control over how the link works. You don't get to edit the link at all.
You don't really like these boots, do you?
I bought them. They didn't fit.
I love them.
They were super cute. No, they're really cute. It's not a flat
wedge. Wedges are very comfortable, Leo.
Yeah, and that kind of wedge.
Really?
Walking on rubber.
I don't want to talk about anything, but these are not.
They're like tires. They're like tire material.
So you like, because they're not attractive. You don't think they're attractive.
Oh, no, they are attractive. I had them.
Let's see your shoes.
There's no accounting for taste.
Don't look at my shoes.
No,
I'm a boy. I don't have to have good shoes.
I did have to send them back, though. They didn't
fit.
I
think this is where the bump on the log comes in.
My footwear? Is that what you're talking about? Well,
everyone has different tastes, guys. Come on.
I'm just teasing you.
It's all about how you put it all together.
Yeah, I'm just teasing you. It's the outfit. It's the look.
It's how it all works together.
It's the look. But I am sad that wedges are back in.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I love wedges.
Wedges are awesome.
They're like heels, but with like...
Yeah, women like wedges.
Way more comfort. Yeah.
Guys don't like wedges.
Really?
Yeah. Guys? Chat room?
Some guys like Crocs.
We don't dress.
Some guys wear wedges.
I'm wearing Crocs.
We don't dress for you. We dress for other women.
I know.
We don't dress for dudes.
I know.
Yep. We don't really care what you like.
I know.
That's the problem. Your problem, anyway.
Dress for dudes, we'd all be walking around like Jessica Rabbit every day.
Yeah.
Boring.
Now that's not a bad idea.
Boring.
Ugh. All right. Pinterest revises terms of service, and this I didn't know, gives up right to sell your content. Now, this comes up every single time there's a new website. They use boilerplate stuff, and one of the things they say is we reserve the right in all future media to do whatever we want.
Yep.
Because the lawyers just say, well, reserve all rights and we'll figure it out later. But they're not going to resell your content. They're not going to take that picture of the wedges and resell that. What value is there?
But I think when the wedges not necessarily...
I guess if you put your picture,
if you're an artist and you're pinning your artwork,
or your photography,
you know, that's your copyrighted work, and if they're selling it and you're not getting a kickback,
they said selling content was never our intention. We removed this from our updated terms, and I think that makes sense. You see this all the time. In fact, if Denise Howell were here, she'd say, "Yeah, this is commonplace. They always reserve more than they are going to use, just in case." And then if somebody notices it, they say, nah, we don't really care. Lawyer and one-time Pinterest lover Kirsten Kowalski ostentatiously deleted her boards after learning that the terms of service could leave her vulnerable to copyright litigation.
Hmm.
They do say that the user is solely responsible for any copyright infringement.
I know writers, going back to not Pinterest selling your copyright, but the infringement of copyright. I know some writers who have deleted their accounts, their boards, because they don't want to be responsible for the copyright infringement that's possible, potential.
But, I mean, why should Pinterest be responsible?
Mm-hmm.
They're just a carrier. Aren't you always responsible if you infringe copyright?
Yeah.
I mean, if I put something on YouTube that's a copyright infringement, it's not YouTube's fault.
Mm-hmm. It should be the responsibility of the individual.
Well, I mean, that problem has gone back time and time again. Like, who is responsible for copyright?
ISPs are not out of the water in the clear, as we see all the time.
Yeah.
It should be most of the time, but it doesn't always work that way.
AT&T says, I told you so. T-Mobile is going to fire 1,900 people in their call center. They're planning to fire more, restructuring ahead. AT&T says, we could have saved those jobs if you would just have allowed us to merge with T-Mobile. I guess we'll never really know.
The FCC is not happy about this.
Really?
They're like, yeah, no, they can't really say that. Like, our initial look at this was that would have
even more jobs.
Lost jobs.
Even more jobs.
Yeah. So the fact that they're saying this is totally kind of disingenuous and kind of, you know, looking back at it and being like, well, you know, you should have gone our way. We would have saved this.
No one knows. It's like AT&T obviously wanted the merger to go through. It didn't. So they can sort of say whatever they want.
It's sour grapes.
Yes.
It's sour grapes at the end of the the end of the day.
It's
neener, neener, neener.
Whether it's true or not, what's the point of saying this except to upset everyone?
Here's a fun headline. Lookout, which is a security firm, makes mobile software for Android, says that Americans will lose $30 billion in smartphones every year.
Lose or like lose have them
as
stolen.
As loses
or...
them in a forest, right? It's like, where's my phone?
I don't know.
I'm one of those people.
Have you ever lost a phone?
I actually once left my phone in the middle of Golden Gate Park at a barbecue. It had fallen out of my pocket, and I used to find my phone.
You found it?
Yeah, like in a bush.
Because I have tried.
Like,
I have not on
a trail or anything marked.
Because
it's not
very granular, so you had a lot of area to look.
But I kind of remembered where I was.
In a bush.
I had done a little pee
apparently.
Break. It was a pee break, okay?
Okay.
Full disclosure.
You should use the Go Girl.
Oh,
never
man.
Mind. Don't worry about it.
Oh, well.
No.
That's a
news. In any case, yes. I lost it and I recovered it.
I got to say, there was no pre-interview. I had no idea where that was going, but that was good.
Thank you.
Have you ever lost a phone?
No. I've had a phone stolen.
Stolen?
Stolen.
My purse
was stolen and the phone and wallet were gone.
I think stolen is lose. Stolen is the same. You didn't actively lose it, but somebody took it.
Yeah, one interesting thing about this story is that the top cities where people lose their phones are also the highest in high crime.
Crime rate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who would steal a cell phone? That's so stupid. You can't use it.
All the time.
But you can't. There's nothing you could do with it.
Yeah, sure there is.
Well, don't you just immediately cancel this phone service and then it's no good?
No, there's a huge.
So they figure you're not going to notice burner phones?
The closest I ever came to losing my phone was I was using it in an airport terminal. And I got up to get on my plane, and I realized sitting down in the plane that I didn't have my phone. You get that moment of like
absolute panic. Yeah.
And so I talked to the stewardess. I was like, oh my gosh, I think I left something in the terminal. Can I go back? And they hadn't closed the doors yet. So I ran back, and they wouldn't let me out past the gate, you know, back into the terminal. But the guy who was sitting next to me at that moment was coming up to the front desk to bring it to them. And so I got it. And I was like, you are my favorite ever. Thank
ever.
You.
Ever.
Gosh, we're so attached to them. It's frightening sometimes when you get that moment of like, oh no, where is it? Oh my gosh, what happened? One of my best friends, she loses her phone in her purse like once a week. And she can't find it. And she spends like 10 minutes trying to find
she
it.
She needs a smaller purse.
I know you're not
talking
about me, but you could be describing.
You have a very large purse.
It's not that
And
big.
Let's talk about the issue of
it's
purse
just
escalation.
Cavernous.
Because what happens is you start with a small purse and it just gets bigger and bigger. And it
escalates.
And
then you have
you know
a baby, and it becomes a diaper bag.
Diaper bag.
You know what I did? You know how I fixed this problem?
And by the way, it never gets smaller again.
Never,
way.
Ever.
No. I went, my problem was large wallet. My problem was my wallet was like one of those folio-sized like fold wallets.
It was hiding the phone.
So I got a very, I got a very small wallet. And so then my purse size could shrink. Uh-huh. And now it's much easier to find everything because I just have a very small purse.
You should pin that.
I should pin
my,
that.
My wallet that I've used forever, it's a cigarette case or... if not a cigarette case, then just a little business card.
Mm.
Metal,
but then where
do you
put
your
cigarettes?
Business card. I don't have cigarettes.
So I heard a story, and it's probably John C. Dvorak probably told it to me, which means it's probably completely apocryphal.
Totally untrue.
But this is the story I heard, that when a New York City cabbie finds a phone in the back seat of the cab, you're never going to get it back if you leave it in a cab, because what the cabbie can do is they drive somewhere, and they give it to a guy, and he gives them cash. I mean, just boom. But now this is the interesting part of the story. You will get more cash. The cabbie will get more cash if the phone isn't wiped. Because not only now do they have a phone, but they've got personal information on that phone that they potentially can use against you. Like credit card information and stuff.
Yeah.
So just so you know, if you leave it in a cab, maybe some cabbies, I'm sure many cabbies will.
I have heard stories of people leaving phones in cabs, calling the company, getting the phone back in New York City.
I'm sure
that
happens.
So it does happen.
But then maybe this is completely apocryphal, but it's kind of interesting that there's more value in the phone if it still has stuff on it, because you could use that stuff.
I once lost my iPad. I mean, how does anyone even do that?
That's
big.
Terrible. Did you get it back?
I did.
Yeah.
But I panicked in the streets.
You got to stop taking things in bushes, because that's not.
This was not in a bush. That's too much reading. I don't need all that. No,
this
it was actually
it was
at my gym.
This time it was a tree. You were just sitting up in a branch of the tree reading.
It's just delightful up there, you know, with the flipboard.
And the birds.
Why'd you ever want to come down?
Squirrel. Here, squirrel.
Sarah, an iPad in the hand is worth two in a bush.
Yes. That's our show title.
This could be deep. This is fascinating to me. This is fascinating to me. And I've been saying this for a long time, that physical media is dead. And I've been laughed at. I've been mocked But for the first time ever this year, consumers will watch more movies online than on DVDs. For the first time ever.
Well, thank goodness. Isn't it time that that's the way that these stats are going?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I agree.
I know that there are a lot of Blu-ray fans out there where it's like that's still your best option.
When I say this, and watch, because the chat room is going to go crazy saying, hey, these are streaming is crap looking. If you want Blu-ray, you can still get Blu-ray. Sure. Nobody's saying you can't get Blu-ray, but more and more people are going to watch, well, Mad Men's tonight, right? So I bought the season pass on iTunes because I know it's just convenient, $35.
Well, you don't get to watch till midnight then.
Right. Well, that's the disadvantage.
Mm-hmm. You got to wait a day.
But then at least, and then I own it.
Yeah.
But you did that, right? You and MG bought it on iTunes because you're not cord cutters at home, but you just thought it would be better that
way.
We
are cord cutters.
Oh, you are? You don't have?
We don't have cable.
So you have to do
this. This is our only option unless we were to, you know, pirate something.
Are you going to watch it on TV tonight?
TV.
Yeah.
Which we would never do, obviously. They're laughing at me.
She's doing it tonight.
Like I had to clarify.
MG, if you're watching.
We are going to pirate Game of Thrones, though. We've decided. We're being very public about it. We've been forced by HBO.
That's such a lie. Are you oatmealing?
No, I'm serious.
No, really?
Have you seen the oatmeal?
I'm not waiting a year. Yeah. I'm not waiting a year.
Well, the first season is out.
Season one's out.
But you're saying you're not going to wait until season two is out in a year.
The first season came to iTunes a year later.
I see.
Which we bought the season pass. We devoured the whole season in like three nights, and we need more.
She can't subscribe to HBO because you don't have cable.
Right.
Yeah.
This is HBO why I'm in the same situation. Why do you not do a la carte at this point? It's still after
because
years
HBO
and years
and the cable
tied
networks.
Into the cable
it's
network.
It's their right to do that. Mm-hmm. Okay, I hate to be arguing on this.
It's the same reason that like current TV couldn't put the same stuff on the website as they could on their cable channels, and there's this whole cable company and
that's true
producers.
That's true. We had that problem at Tech TV. Mm-hmm. They said you can only put 10 minutes of any show online because we want people to watch it on our cable. We want people to pay for cable. If you put it online, nobody would have cable.
Yeah.
And so you think HBO has these deals with the cable companies. They've got to protect their MSO relationships.
Probably.
And you got to make people watch it on our cable because otherwise they'll cut the cord.
It's not, and cord cutting isn't to the point yet where we can make the power of the cable companies obsolete.
Right.
So it's
but isn't that their right to do it? I mean, it's still. I mean, if they're a company, they can do whatever they want.
You're kind of
breaking the law, so that because you're just this is that oatmeal thing. You just why didn't you?
Right. I'm half kidding. Obviously, no one's forcing me to do anything. Right. It's just that the system does not work within the
reason.
Right.
So
in my opinion,
who was it?
Why don't they just
who was it coined the term
oatmeal?
I was Gina Trapani coined the term oatmealing, or maybe she didn't coin it, but she brought it to light. And the idea from this oatmeal cartoon is you steal it, but you make an internal pledge that as soon as it's available to buy, I will buy it. So that way you're getting it when you want it, but they're still getting the revenue. Would you do that?
Absolutely. I would even pay a premium.
Right. Well, I know you would pay a premium now.
To own it in high quality.
Knowing you've already downloaded it on BitTorrent.
Absolutely.
You will.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is not about saving a few bucks. This is about wanting to experience a show I really like.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there is merit to that because you'll be talking about it. Everybody will be talking about it.
Yeah.
A year later, it's kind of over. It's done. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about it while it's happening.
Yeah, we have cable. I bought HBO so I could watch Game of Thrones.
That's what they want you to do.
I know. And now I'm actually really happy I did because we watch so
There's
much
great stuff.
On HBO
I
Go.
I love HBO.
Oh, my gosh. We use it constantly. Yeah.
If I had cable, I'd probably watch
it. You
HBO.
Don't have it either.
I don't have it.
I'm real mad. I mean, I watched the entirety of The Wire.
Isn't that a great show?
Yeah, we've been watching Life's Too Short and all these really bad
Life is too short
shows.
If you watch all that crap.
It goes that fast.
All the Ricky Gervais stuff.
You're going to be my age and you're going to look back and say, I wish I'd watched less TV.
I don't have time to watch TV anymore.
Yeah, really. The number of movies.
I could have done so much more with my life.
The number of movies.
Being a host and starting a business.
Just think what I could have done.
Just think of all the things I could have done.
The number of movies rented or bought online from outlets like Netflix and iTunes will grow 135% this year. 3.4 billion movies. This is according to IHS Screen Digest. People will spend less. And this might be a big deal because they were spending $11 billion on DVDs and Blu-rays. They'll only spend $1.7 billion on digital movies. It's cheaper, right? But you're only renting it. You know, I think there is actually a lot of wasted money because people buy a DVD and they never watch it again. Or they buy a Blu-ray and they never watch it again. I mean, how many times can you watch a movie over and over?
You're also paying for all the packaging.
I'm not a rewatcher.
I think for most people, it's like it's a collector's thing.
It's more like I have it.
Yeah, it's not that because you're going to use
thing.
It. But that's why I love digital so much. I mean, I love the look of books in a bookcase type thing.
Well, that's different.
But it takes up room and they're heavy when you move
like
and
books.
There's all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's the same idea. I mean, physical media, you got to put somewhere. And then you got to try to make it look kind of nice if you've got a lot of it. And that's just something less of that is great. I love digital.
Just so everybody knows, because the movie industry is going to bitch in a moment about this loss of revenue. It's not from piracy. It's from legitimate legal streaming. We played this last week. It was so great. Rob Reed's video of his TED Talk about copyright math. Did you see that? You got to watch it.
No,
it's
see
so
that.
Funny.
Check that out.
He talks about the numbers the movie industry promulgates and the music industry promulgates about the cost of piracy. They actually claim that it costs more jobs than there are in the music and movie industry. How can you lose more jobs than exist?
That's fuzzy math.
Yeah. It's well worth watching. Rob Reed.
We got him for triangulation in a month. Yeah.
Because he has a book. You know, one of the reasons he did this speech, he's writing a new novel. He's the guy who started Rhapsody and then Listen.com.
Also, Morgan Webb's husband.
Married to Morgan Webb. Mm-hmm. Which, as he says, it makes him the luckiest man on earth. Isn't that sweet?
I would like to be married to Morgan Webb. She's lovely.
She's the lovely Morgan Webb. She's great. We love her. But he's writing a novel about aliens who get sued for piracy. I don't know where it goes from there, but I can't wait. And we'll talk to him. His book comes out in July. But we're going to talk to him next month on triangulation. Yeah. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Ex-Googlers are raising money to stop Google from tracking you. If you ever wanted an admission that Google must be tracking you, it would be this. Google engineers...
Of course they're tracking you.
Like, what?
Oh, I thought that was disputed. No? Okay.
No.
I guess you're right. Obviously they're tracking you. But when you say tracking, it implies like they're following you around. Like there's a human
who's
paying attention. It's just some automated stuff.
Yeah.
There's nobody from Google.
Cue the strange Google person in the background.
There's nobody from Google following you around. There's nobody at Google who knows what Veronica Belmont's been doing.
Why did you use me as the example?
Well, I don't know. It's just maybe you'd
be
interested in this startup. Google engineer Brian Kenish created Facebook Disconnect a couple of years ago. It's a Chrome extension that disables
great
traffic.
Extension.
You use it?
I have used it. I don't use it now, but I've tested it out before.
It has 200,000 users, 50,000 in the first 2 weeks. So he said, He left his job at Google, and another Google engineer joined him, and they are now going to create disconnects for Google as well as Facebook.
I think
the
website
LinkedIn
is disconnect.me. Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that the website?
I think so.
Because that's the site where it gives you links to all the things that you can... right?
Well, click through on the disconnect link in the up at the top.
What does that mean when you say click through?
I mean, click there.
Click that?
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, people get real worked up.
Sticking to the same article again.
People get upset about data tracking and people collecting information and the use of that information. And a lot of times I think there's a lot of, you know, FUD about the whole idea.
I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you.
It gets a little bit too intense sometimes.
People take it personally like there's somebody actually... tracking you.
Yeah.
I think the word track is a bad choice.
There's legitimate reasons to have information, and there's, you know, reasons that are probably that go beyond the comfort zone of privacy.
Right.
And knowing what those are and being informed about good uses of privacy versus bad uses of information is important.
Now,
and we don't always know. And it takes sometimes having some rude awakenings to realize when that data is being used in ways that you may not want it to.
But what would be a way that you wouldn't want it to be used?
You wouldn't want ads that are targeted to you you might feel are more manipulative because
what are you, a little baby that you have to be protected from a manipulative ad?
For example, these patents.
I'm just telling you the argument that some people
have.
There's a story
on your own lineup about Google filing patents to use background noise in phone calls over Google Voice in order to target ads towards people
I don't even understand. They have Google Maps and geopositioning, and so you know where somebody is. You have Google Maps.
What's wrong
there's
with
a weather
that?
Layer, and suddenly you know that it's raining.
So what's wrong with that?
Background noise.
Well, that's what I mean. Sometimes there's good reasons, and sometimes there's reasons.
Do you know what the background noise would be for? And there are actually services that do this. It listens to the television, hears what show you're watching. Oh, they like Glee. And it offers you the Glee soundtrack.
Well, here's something like the for Google Maps, for Street View.
But no humans doing that. It's just kind of automated. Is that bad?
For Street View, for example, if you feel uncomfortable having your image on Street View, you can ask to be taken down.
Which is ridiculous.
But you would feel totally comfortable having your image on
Google
Maps.
Maybe you're that naked guy in France with a goat on his head.
Well, don't walk around naked with a goat on your head.
Well, you didn't know there was going to be a Google Street View car.
Somebody might see you. It's in public.
On the internet forever. You have no kind of recourse for preventing that from happening in the first place. You have to actively, proactively go after that.
But you are in public. It's completely legal to take a picture of a person in public, doing something in public.
Yep.
Even if it's what they're doing in public is embarrassing to them. It's completely legal.
Yep.
I mean, Leo, your stance is a very common one where it's like, hey, listen, you're online. Nothing's sacred anymore. There is no privacy. What's really the problem here? And I think
I agree there's privacy.
Services like Disconnect and what they're trying to provide as a service to people is, hey, listen, Google does all of these things because they make money on advertising and they need to track you and have privacy agreements within all of their properties to figure out how to target you better. Got it. I mean, they're a for-profit company. And that's fine. But I, as a user, should have the option how much information I'm giving them.
Oh, I'm not disagreeing.
So third-party services like this.
I'm not disagreeing.
That's why they're so popular.
But you should. But there's this moral panic over it that is overshoot because you're assuming it's like some personal intrusion of, you can't.
Right.
If I'm in my yard with my baby, for example, which I do not have, if I was in a yard with someone else's baby.
If you were in a yard with your baby, we'd want to see pictures.
I cannot believe you have a baby.
And the Google Street View cars comes around. See, now everyone would know about my secret baby. And maybe I'm uncomfortable with that.
And you only have that in your private Facebook profile.
So here's the site, disconnect.me.
My secret that I had to give to my employer.
Disconnect makes
everybody knows.
This is their tagline. Disconnect makes the web your business, not theirs. So really that's underscoring what's going on here, which is you're using a free site like Google and they're trying to monetize your attention. It's their business. And it's saying, no, you should be able to use a free site like Google without them making any money on you. And that's my only issue is, well, then you shouldn't use Google because that's how they pay for their servers. And they have the right. I think they should have the right to not intrude on your privacy, but to, for instance, give you relevant ads. They think that makes more money. There's no evidence that does, by the way. In fact, the evidence seems to be the contrary, that targeted ads don't work. However, I would, if I'm a Glee fan, I'm going to prefer a Glee ad to an ad for Sons of Anarchy.
Right.
So what's wrong with that? It's not like a human is observing, Veronica has a secret baby.
Well, I just get annoyed when I'm searching for stuff or research for like Texilla or something on Amazon looking for prices of products. And then for months afterwards, I get Amazon like emails being like, you were searching for.
Right. Well, you don't like spam. You don't like spam mail. That's spam. So that's spam. You don't like spam.
But
I agree.
Still using your personal preferences in order to target marketing towards you.
But if you just instead you got ads on Facebook from now on that showed stuff that was related to stuff you were searching, would that be bothersome? You're going to see ads anyway, by the way.
It's distracting, certainly.
It creeps you out. It's changing your natural behavior by pushing you in a direction. It creeps you out is the problem because it isn't. That is anthropomorphized, and I don't want to get in this conversation. It's a tough one for me.
But there's this ad for an Android phone where the guy's like, this comes back to babies again. I swear to God, you did this.
You are really your biological
clone. I have cats. It's fine. But I
was, how I feel too.
But like, there was this ad where the guy's taking pictures of his child, his new baby, with his Android phone. He's like, oh, and I lost my phone and all my pictures are gone. Oh, but wait, no, Google saved them all those precious moments. I'm like, no, that's creepy, actually. Google's been saving all the pictures of your baby and putting them on the internet. And you didn't even know until later.
And I think that's the real issue is that we feel like Google doesn't understand privacy. And maybe they don't.
I find it very interesting how the perception of Google is changing over time.
No kidding.
In a relatively short period of
time. And that ad is a good example because they put that ad on because they thought that was a good thing.
Yeah.
What they didn't understand is that people might think that was creepy.
Like, oh, so all the pictures I'm taking are being uploaded automatically and I don't even know?
Of my baby.
But I use Android. I have an Android phone. And it is part of, if you take a picture through Google+, then it automatically loads it, but mm-hmm. your Android phone doesn't necessarily automatically load everything up to right. Google.
That's how that was the perception from this commercial.
Yeah, it doesn't sure. happen. but
you can turn it on.
And you can turn it on.
Which I have done.
You can turn that on. You can turn it on. You can choose not to turn it on.
And by
on
the way, your
well.
Apple phone has the same feature.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's
actually a
choice
feature
to
I
you.
Love.
Yeah. But it's a choice. It's not something that just happens behind the scenes.
And when did I get to an age where I just think technology is creepy? Apparently, I've hit that wall where I'm like,
it's
I don't understand. An age thing. This is weird.
It's not an age thing. There are plenty of people your age who think that, and
says
there are
the
plenty of people my
video
age
games
who do not.
All the time, yeah.
I actually have, no problem personally with Google tracking me. Like, go ahead and track me. It's fine. I have no issue with it. I don't even see ads online. I understand that people get bent out of shape about ads, you know, in Gmail.
Nobody
and that sort of
sees
thing.
Ads online. That's the truth.
But the
that's
thing
the
is I know that it's effective because that's how a lot of companies are making the bulk of their money. But I cannot tell you the last time I clicked on a banner ad, well, a text link, anything.
Is,
I just don't
is,
see it.
The most done sponsored links, I think, on the top of Google results.
By the way, I turn.
I don't click on those, but
the best,
because I'm
I
like,
will.
Ooh, that's the grayed out sponsory there stuff.
Those,
go back.
There are
those
kinds of ads, you know, the AdWords type stuff. And then there's there are other uses of this information that are really interesting, where they can use your past behavior so that if you actually do go to a website and want to purchase something based on your past behavior, they can funnel you to particular web pages that are better suited to choices that you will make. And so by using your past purchasing behavior, your past browsing behavior, you know, they might know that you like particular Ford cars or whatever, or particular kind of car, particular kind of music or whatever.
Is that creepy?
Is it creepy?
I think
it's helping you shop more easily in a really,
bit.
Really
but you
big
but are you
environment.
Also losing choice? Are you also losing like the serendipitous finding of something you may not otherwise have found?
For somebody who sometimes agonizes over what kind of milk to buy for like way too long, sometimes having fewer choices is nice. I'm not saying somebody that that's you know that I'm pro anti-choice.
Somebody in the chat room, Rookie Jet in the chat room says,
"Pro-choice. When it comes to milk, this, I am pro-choice."
Here's the proposition. I think this is interesting. Rookie Jet says it's introverts versus extroverts. Some people don't like to share. Even if the data isn't intended to be shared, it's still tracked and logged. Give those people an option to use and pay for the service with a way other than personalized data, and data that's used for the service is encrypted. It doesn't have to be either or. They should be more accessible. Does that seem like a good solution? In other words, Google says, okay, you got two choices. We'll track you. We'll give you targeted ads. Or you give us 5 cents a search. Or whatever it is. A buck a month.
No, I don't like that idea.
You can pay for it.
See, you want it free.
I want it every. I want it free. I want it my way. I don't
you
even
want
know
it no
my way
tracking.
Is.
You want it free, and I think that's you're pretty much universal. People think that people will pay for stuff. Nobody
See, the thing
pays
is,
for
I'm,
anything.
Maybe
Nobody
I'm more tinfoil hatty than I thought I was, because I started out this conversation saying that you know there's certain types of data information sharing that is important, helps build better product, makes better user experiences. But it seems like the more and more I talk about it, the more and more like irate about it I get. So maybe I
you
know
don't,
maybe
you,
my feelings
are, you
are
an
different
introvert?
From it actually. Do I look like an introvert,
no.
Leo? No.
That's a great
Do I act
TED
like
talk,
an introvert?
I think you're a little bit of an introvert, actually.
Twit hosts are
so?
Not introverts.
The power of introverts is a great
That's
TED
some of our
talk.
Shows.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, no.
I love introverts.
Oh, amazing.
God bless the introvert. I am an introvert.
I'm an introvert, too.
I am, too.
And Wait,
I
would
think,
never guess it.
What? Yes. You're not an introvert.
No, you're
I'm
kidding.
Very shy.
And my husband's giving me the thumbs
Any
down.
Hats
He's like,
you
no.
own in there? Your crazy accents? That's extrovert
I
stuff.
I am not an extrovert. I'm sorry, I'm an introvert.
You are mistaken.
I don't think I know you anymore.
All right. I'm just telling you. I just am. You may not know it, but I'm very shy. Let's take a break, and yeah. we'll come back with more of me. Because I know that's really what you're here for. Let's talk about Audible.com. What do you say? Any of you listen to Audible?
Big tubs it.
I know you do. Yeah, Veronica's. You always are recommending, if you can, on Sword and Laser, an audiobook.
Yeah, so right now we're about to start reading The Magicians by Lev Grossman, which is available on Audible, which I'm listening to currently. And I'm actually ahead for once on my Sword and Laser pick, so
Yay.
That's exciting. So, yeah, we're launching Sword and Laser as a show next month.
That's so exciting.
It's very exciting.
Can I mention?
Yeah, you can talk about it all you want now.
Because next door,
Yeah, the set.
There's a castle next door.
It's coming together.
Tom and Veronica built a castle with a dragon and everything.
It's amazing.
The dragon's going to even
talk.
It's
so great.
The dragon will eventually talk at some point. Yeah.
I mean, we're working on that. The best thing in the world.
So you guys, the two of you built it?
Yeah, we didn't build, no. We
had our own little hands and hammers.
I'm like, really?
I wish I was that awesome. No, we had...
Four hands built this dragon.
We had a great company called Fonco Creative. They built the set, and they did an amazing job. And yeah, we're launching on April 13th, but that's beside the point. I'm hijacking
your
ad read.
No. Actually, this is a great opportunity. This is Felicia Day's new channel on YouTube.
Yes, Geek and Sundry.
Geek and Sundry, and you're going to be part of that, along with a lot of other great people. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited.
Ooh. Yeah, Will Wheaton's doing a tabletop show called...
You're actually sharing the time slot with Will.
We are. Well, so every other Friday. So there is Felicia's show, The Flog, where she does crazy stuff. We're planning an episode together right now that I think is going to be really fun.
That'll be fun.
So she tries all sorts of wacky, crazy jobs. It's almost like dirty jobs, but less dirty, more just kind of fun and crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then Will Wheaton's doing tabletop.
I think this is such a good idea.
There's Morgan right there, actually.
I had this idea ages ago with poker. I wanted to have like geek poker, but this is even more fun.
And there's Grant. Yeah, he's got some great people
Grant
on there.
Great.
All tabletop games, and it's hysterical. There's Freddie W from YouTube, written by a kid, is a show where kids come up with ideas for movies, and then they get real directors to make the show, the movies.
Oh, that's so good.
So they make shorts. I'm pretty sure they're not feature length, obviously, but they are. And there's Sword and Laser.
Exciting.
The trailer doesn't do the set justice. It was a little bit
dark.
You can't
see it. Yeah.
That was before we got all the lights in and all
the sparkly things. It's not a set. It's a real castle.
Yeah. It's kind of like the Cantina, but a little more from Star Wars.
It's very confusing because it's both Sword and Laser.
It's both Sword and Laser. It's like a pub. And then Dark Horse has a show as well where they're doing all sorts of great animated stuff.
That's great.
And all sorts of new and old stories, I think, as well. And Learning Town is Paul and Storm's show. So
this
they're doing
promo
a
is so stupid. They didn't have anything to do. So they
didn't
just stood
have
there.
Time. Yeah,
we'll have a show.
They're coming out later. And then season 5 of The Guild will be on there as well. And they're turning all the old seasons into movies. So they'll be uninterrupted, all with all new commentary and cool stuff.
So fun.
Yeah, outtakes. And they've been editing that for
Nathan Fillion.
There's your buddy.
Spend some of that Google money. That's what I like.
So we're doing...
So now you really have to start watching targeted ads. I hate to tell you,
Veronica. Yeah.
Wait, why?
Because you're spending some of that Google money.
Oh, true. Yes.
Good point.
Yeah, YouTube is funding the project.
Where do you think that money comes from?
All right. You
targeted
win this round.
Targeted ads,
you
baby.
You win this round, Google.
Start clicking.
Now let me pay some bills. This ad is not targeted. It's aimed at all of you. And The Magicians by Lev Grossman, that would be a very, very good choice.
It's excellent.
So here's the deal. I'm going to set it up so you get two credits. You'll be going to audible.com/twit2. Sign up for the Platinum account, which is 2 books a month. But your first 2 books are free. First 2 credits are free. Now, some books, like the Game of Thrones, is 2 credits. So that could be the one thing that you get. I have to recommend a book because Trey Ratcliffe, I haven't started it yet, but I know you've read it. I just got to Dance with Dragons, the Roy Dotrice version. I'm very excited about this. Patrick Rothfuss's Name of the Wind.
Rothfuss.
Have you read this?
Oh, yes. He's an amazing writer. This is his first full-length novel, The Name of the Wind. The second one is The Wise Man's Fear, which just came out a few months ago.
Part of the Kingkiller Chronicles.
The second book, which was really exciting for
Who
me.
Did?
I did.
You read the second book?
I beta read the second book.
Oh, you beta read it?
Yeah. So I got to read it before it was published and give feedback and stuff, and that was awesome. But he's an amazing writer, and it's part of the Kingkiller
Chronicles
trilogy.
So would you suggest I get both of these?
I would say you should get both of those at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah.
I see no reason not to. There's some of my favorite
And that's a lot of hours,
42
hours in the next book. So, yeah, Trey Ratcliffe said to me, I judge people by this book. If you read this book and you don't love it, then I don't want to be your friend.
Wow.
Writes you off.
He writes you off. So this is my next book, and I feel like
and
there's some pressure.
And you're going to have to love it.
There's some pressure here. But I better like this book. So anyway, I just downloaded. Anyway, here's the deal. You get 2 credits, 2 books. We've just given you 3 that you might want to try.
I have more, too.
What else?
May I? Sorry. Sarah's like, stop talking about this.
She's an Audible fan, too.
I need some ideas.
So Ian Tregillis has a series called the... The Milkweed Chronicles, and it starts with the Bitter Seeds was the first book, and he just came out on Audible, specifically The Coldest War, which the Audible version came out. The hardcover book is not coming out until this summer.
What?
So you can actually listen to The Coldest War
before you could read it.
Actually, wow, that's even cool. Comes out.
See, so this is where we're headed, I think. This is where we're headed. Right now, any bestseller comes out, they're going to come out on Audible at the same time. But that's interesting. They're getting exclusives.
Yeah, way in advance.
You want to recommend one, too? No?
Okay. I have a recommendation.
What?
Dirt.
Ooh. What's it about?
Dirt.
Is it a science book?
It is, it's...
What's her name?
No, it's a guy, David Montgomery.
And The Erosion of Civilizations.
Dirt, The Erosion of Civilizations. Wow. And it's more about dirt than you ever knew.
I love this kind of book.
There was to learn.
There was a book called Salt that was all about salt.
I think it's the same writer.
Is it?
Maybe.
Oh, see, I love this kind of stuff. That is great. It's kind of obsessive detail about dirt.
Yes, really interesting about, our farming practices, what happens to the topsoil, where it goes, and how it affects civilizations. Really interesting.
Dirt.
We've got a lot of choices, and there's actually 100,000 books, audible.com. It'll play on everything. They have a great app for the iOS devices. They have a great app for Android devices, too. Your whole library is always available to you, which I really love. So I've had hundreds of books. I've been a member since 2000. So I've got hundreds of books in my library, and I can read any one of them anytime. And I say read because I know I'm not physically reading pages, but it's just like reading. You're hearing every word. In fact, it's better because you're hearing the performance. It comes to life. Highly recommended. Audible.com/twit2. And if we haven't got you going yet,
A funny story about Audible, really quick. A friend of mine who doesn't know that we work with Audible at Twit, I saw him recently, and I said, hey, how you doing? What's new? Type of a thing. And he's like, oh, my gosh. I am listening to Game of Thrones on Audible. You're going to love it. It's the best. I he could not, and I sort of had to stop him and say, I'm familiar with Audible. Yeah. I know how it works. That's great, though. But he was so, he could not get over how much fun he was having, because he has a long commute, as do I, listening to this book. He loves the guy's voice. He loves everything
Dotrice,
about it.
Amazing.
He was just kind of over the moon about how much fun he was having.
I'm with him. I'm just looking back. This is my first Audible book was February 7th, 2000, 12 years ago. And you know what it was? The best of science fiction and fantasy. It was a short story compilation.
That's great.
And then P.G. Woodhouse and John Grisham, E.L. Doctorow.
Like some good writers in there.
I can listen to any of these now again, and that's what's so cool. Mm-hmm. 571 books in my library. I wish I had them on the wall, because I do like how books look, but you know what? Having them on your iPod's almost better. Audible.com/twit2. I saw that story you were looking at.
Which one?
It was a good one.
Which story?
My first was 08.
Really?
Yeah.
See, you're a noob.
I'm a newbie.
Interesting. Path is growing faster in Asia than the West.
Very interesting.
You would think, because they're a bunch of introverts, that they wouldn't be interested in Path.
The whole Path story is really fascinating to me, because Path launched over a year ago. And for anybody who's not familiar with Path, it started out as a 50-friend maximum social network. So
now
it's designed to be. Now it's 150.
Still not big.
They have made some concessions based on user feedback. But it took them about a year to launch version 2 of Path, which took off like a rocket.
Yeah.
And I mean, I always try out new products because it's part of my job, and I like doing stuff like that. But I didn't like Path until version 2 came out.
Nope.
I had no incentive to use it. And now I have to remember to use Instagram. I mean, honestly, that's how much I like Path. I'm in there all day.
Will it change? Yeah, I am too. I love Path.
I live vicariously through Sarah. Sarah's Sarah's out.
Give me my iPad so I can show them
the nightlife.
I can't. No, this was interesting because
she's getting pizza at 2 a.m.
I live in an interesting city. I like to sample.
Do I have permission to show?
Yeah, go for it.
See, this is an interesting thing, because what you forget is that Path is not like other social networks, that you are sharing it with a limited number of people.
Right.
And I forget that this stuff isn't public.
Yeah.
I mean, you can send posts to Twitter or Facebook.
In fact, I usually do. Almost always.
I have to remember to use it more. I'm bad about using it.
I've noticed that you and Ryan don't use Path
That I noticed that you changed your cover to pie.
I did. And you know, it's I call it path bait. When you change your cover, you people see that in their feed, and then they go to your profile. So I count how many people.
I went there. I wanted to see what it was.
Into visiting, and path it's the pie bait. Picture. Good stuff. But it interests me. I wonder, because I know there are a lot of other people who also like path, what is going on in Asia where it's taking off like wildfire?
I think the penetration of smartphones, for, you know, Japan is an example where more people have computerized smartphones than they have computers in their apartments. And that this makes sense. Mm-hmm. This is they're more evolved in terms of keeping in touch with one another using the phone.
Yeah.
So path makes, I think, a lot of sense. I don't know. That's my speculation.
I think also, especially China, I mean, growing at a crazy clip as far as people being, you know, getting phones and downloading these services and the fact that it's available. It's just a huge, crazy growing sector.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about the robot jellyfish?
I love this story.
I don't know this story.
I reported on this story for Twist this week and played the video as my science meditation for the week on Dr. Kiki's Science Hour. I love this jellyfish.
So they made a hydrogen fuel powered jellyfish because it turns out this is actually a pretty good way to motivate.
Yeah, well the way that it works is sustainable as well, so that they wouldn't need powered by oxygen, basically hydrogen oxygen, and
it's like a fuel cell.
It's like a fuel cell, and the platinum on the surface it is maintained. So as long as that platinum is not degraded in any way, there is a consistent fuel source.
That's the catalyst.
Catalyze the reaction. And the energy that's released, heat gets released, and it's the heat that actually...
That propels it.
Propels it. So it's it's using metamaterials. And so jellyfish have a band of muscle that they use to squeeze their cone, and that pushes water out of the cone that allows them to move. And in this case, they're using a metamaterial that changes shape when it heats up.
Wow.
And then when the heat goes away, it goes back to its original shape. And so the design is actually really smart because it could last for however long.
Years.
Just years. It could keep going in the environment forever.
Do you think it's... that there is some magic in the design, that it just makes sense that we, in fact, we see this all the time, copy natural designs in our designs because they actually turn out to work the best, except for bipedalism. That doesn't work so good. Walking is not a natural thing.
Walking's all right.
It's hard to make walking robots.
It's hard to make walking robots because of the energy source. The actual, we're getting the walking. I mean, robots with four legs, it's hard to get those to be coordinated.
Just, why don't we just put wheels on them?
Right. Wheels are much easier.
Roller skates.
Roller skates.
Roller blades.
Or little undulating
robots. Well, walking is efficient. Robots. Is walking efficient? That's what Guy Smiley says.
Walking is pretty efficient. It's actually pretty...
It's a controlled fall, isn't it?
It's a controlled fall. We don't have to control it with our brain. It's a repetitive process that takes place in the spinal column. So as long as you're not... Like, you can walk along and you're thinking about doing stuff on your phone.
Therein lies the problem.
And you can just keep walking out into traffic. And that's why Google Maps has that warning now.
Mm. What? Does Google Maps warn you when you're walking in traffic?
No, for the pedestrian.
Oh, see, that'd be cool if it like said, hey, look around because you're in a street right now. That would be good.
Hey, that's what little blinking
light comes up.
Or even better, it just pulls up street view and says, if you're going to look at the phone, at least I should show you where you're going.
Yeah.
That would be good.
Or it sees you're going to the street, and so it turns on the camera.
An augmented reality.
And
yeah.
You can actually see. Yeah.
You know what? That's going to happen. So there's a big battle going on. Nick Bilton started it in the New York Times. He said, you know, they shouldn't make us turn off our iPads. The pilots are freaking using iPads. There's no scientific evidence. He even brought these devices in to test. He brought Kindles in, and they said, you know, there's nothing coming off of these things. They shouldn't make you turn them off. And now the FAA is thinking about...
For very select devices.
Revisiting the ban on the use of gadgets.
Not for phones, probably
on tablets and e-readers, to start with at least.
Well, amen.
But this article makes me really annoyed.
Peter
this
Bright.
This article, there was nothing. This article was just, it was the philosophical wanderings. Yeah.
I think we should all just take a moment to reflect on where we're going on this trip and what we're doing. And just take a few moments to relax.
Oh, my gosh. I have not read this specific article. Mm-hmm. So the point was, you can turn off your devices for a few minutes. What's the problem? That's not the argument, though. The argument is this going to take the plane down or not?
Right. And that's what I thought it was going to get into. So I was really, somebody's addressing this. And I was really excited because I thought it was going to be like some science. Yeah.
And then,
no.
In fact, the last sentence is the one that tells you everything. The FAA's rules may have little technological basis, but they serve a valuable higher purpose.
No.
Vom.
Okay, we want our phones, damn it.
I have to say the only preachy valid
unplugger.
Reason, yeah. it's very preachy.
You guys sound like addicts.
These people are also the ones who panic when they lose their phone at the bottom of their purses.
I'm just saying. The only thing that I can see that makes sense for turning off devices during landing and takeoff is that you should be paying attention to what the flight attendants are saying.
Right.
You should be listening to the safety instructions. You should be hearing in case there's any. I was taking off on a flight last week coming back from WonderCon, and they aborted the flight as we were about to take off and slammed on the brakes. Yeah. And I was glad that I was, I had my full faculties paying attention to what was going on around me at that moment, because there was a small amount of danger if I hadn't listened, hadn't paid attention enough to put my seatbelt on, hadn't done, the instructions that they gave me.
And imagine if the airlines just changed the message a little bit to say, listen, you gotta have both eyes on us. You gotta be listening. You gotta turn off all those electronic devices because this is serious stuff. If the plane goes down, you're gonna need to know what's a flotation device in here.
But the pretend technological issues that they've stuck to for so long is just, we're
nobody
not buying
believes
it at
it.
This point anymore. Yeah. And even if it was true, the message has become so muddled over time that like you said, no one believes it.
Mm-hmm.
So
the flight attendants don't even believe it half the time.
It's such baloney. I think I'm totally behind Nick on this one, that we need some reform in this area and we need more information and we need more testing. I know it's difficult to test because you have to test each device on an empty aircraft by itself.
Right.
And that is a lot of money. That's a lot of fuel costs. Yep. That's a lot of people time. That's a lot of using airplanes that need to
but
be used elsewhere.
Doesn't it cost more in the end if you have, planes that are crashing and people dying?
That would be bad.
That would be more. That would be worse. Yes. Right.
That's my attitude. To be honest, turn it off. Who cares? I mean,
turn it off if there's a good reason to turn it off.
Yeah.
But I think you've just said a couple of good reasons.
What about standby devices? So your laptop.
Well, the Kindle uses no power at all, right? So leave it on.
There you go. Then you just said,
leave it on. But I think you made a good reason. I think you made a good reason, which is.
He does not have the authority to tell you to do
pay
that.
Pay attention.
No, he doesn't.
Pay attention was a good reason. And the other reason is because we don't know and it's so complicated. Why don't we just leave it off? It's not going to kill you. And the other thing is, by the way,
when people are talking
on the phone on an airplane, it just drives me crazy.
No, I don't think people should talk on the phone on the airplane just because that's irritating. That's,
of course, the airplanes, the airlines themselves,
the elevator,
cell phones, phone service on the, you can call on an airplane phone.
You can Skype if you've got a Wi-Fi enabled flight.
Well, they block those ports, don't they?
Do they? I've had Skype calls. Maybe it's changed, but
maybe.
And then when the early days,
I was under the impression that they were blocking those ports for Skype calls on airplanes.
Maybe so. You can live stream.
But you don't have to turn it off. You can just close the lid, right?
The thing is, I have been on flights before where, not on purpose, but I've left something on.
Oh, I know.
And I realized it afterwards.
The plane went down,
where I'm
so embarrassing.
Yeah, and I killed everybody. Yeah. No, actually, nothing ever happened.
Nothing ever happened.
And that's what I want to get to the bottom of. And I understand that there's some costs associated with it and it's complicated, but I don't want someone to tell me that I'm endangering the lives of many if I'm not.
And if you think about it, if you're someone who closed your laptop, didn't turn it all the way off, how many other people
turns it all the way off.
You're not the only one.
Right.
Sure.
And the plane didn't go down.
Right.
Yeah.
But what about Alec Baldwin? Really?
Hilarious.
I think that's funny.
Even though he was doing something wrong, I was on his team. For
I
kind of
was
thing.
Too. He's playing words with friends. You got to make the move.
It's addicting. Just, Zynga knows.
Zynga knows.
We come full circle.
Let's see what's coming up in the week ahead. What do you say? Tom Merritt is in our TNT newsroom with this. Is he?
Hey, thanks, Leo. Here's a look at what we'll be covering on Tech News today and in the week ahead. Monday, March 26th, kicks off Microsoft Dev Connections in Las Vegas. We might get a little Windows 8 news out of that. March 27th is Y Combinator Demo Day right down the peninsula, Mountain View, California. March 28th, the Nokia Lumia is coming to China. And on March 29th, RIM announces their earnings. All that more coming up in the following week. Back to you, Leo.
Thank you, Tom. Tom Merritt, Sarah Lane, Iaz Akhtar. Every single day, your daily dose of tech news, which we stole from Buzz Out Loud. TNT, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on twit.tv. We killed Buzz Out Loud.
Yeah.
Well, but actually the last Buzz Out Loud was on the 5th, so it's not next week. It's
okay,
week after.
2 weeks from now. Okay, but Veronica, Tom, and Molly, and Jason will all be like the old crew.
I got to fire Jason one last time. The last time ever.
Nice.
That will be
on
cool.
Buzz Out Loud.
That will make
it a big one.
Really, really, really cool.
It'll be spectacular. Cool. Actually, now I feel like I need to do something like way over the top.
You can demand his Facebook password and find something really, really scary in there.
We like this.
That sounds good.
Go HR manager on him.
That sounds good. Like Dr. Kiki will be back on Thursday with the Dr. Kiki Science Hour and This Week in Science.
Yes, I will. And I think it's this week we have Scott Sigler on This Week in Science.
Love Scott.
Nice.
Yeah, he's going to be guest hosting with us.
Oh, how fun.
Awesome.
Love Scott. We had him on Triangulation a little bit back, talked about his books and everything. He's just a great guy.
He has a new book coming out.
Yeah.
He will be on. He's our first in-studio guest for Sword and Laser as well.
Yay.
I love Scott. It's great.
Game On's coming up in about an hour with Veronica Belmont and Brian Brushwood. What's on the show tonight?
What is on the show tonight? Well, we have, we're talking with Anthony Carboni about Ninja Gaiden 3. We have a wonderful prop designer, Bill Doran, here to show off his video game props.
Bill's going to be here? Oh, good.
Yes, he's going to be here. He's amazing. And we have a really funny a little skit with Brian and a special guest that I'm very excited to show about Angry Birds.
Nice.
Can't wait.
I like it already.
You'll also catch Veronica, of course, on Techzilla every week.
Every week,
Techzilla with a K.com. Mm-hmm. And my buddy Patrick Norton, Sarah Lane. Not only hosts TNT, but we do iPad Today every Thursday on the Twit Network.
And the Social Hour on Mondays.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, you and Amber MacArthur do
that's
the Social
right.
Hour.
You know, I was thinking today, hey, that's the only show that's all women.
Hmm.
Not that it's really like the point of the show, but I had just never thought about it that way.
Yeah.
We have male guests on regularly. Yeah. It's not women only.
But it's
two
female hosts.
Two chicks.
You know, I
Dr. Kiki Science Hour.
Is all women.
All women.
Oh. One woman. But.
Well, one of two women only shows.
Yes.
I stand corrected.
Well, Twit is infested with women.
Yeah, we're taking
and
that.
And I think this is one of the things
it's because you're comfortable with your female
it's one
brain.
Of the things I'm most proud of is that we're really pretty much gender blind here. And in technology, that's not always the case. Yep. So I'm glad that we do have lots of shows with women hosts, and especially these women, because they're some of my favorite peoples. Eileen Rivera, our producer. Thank you, Eileen.
Woo-woo.
And, Science News Weekly. I forgot to plug that. That's a new show. We got to plug that. Yeah.
Yeah, Science News Weekly, if you don't have time for an hour-long show, it's, less than 10 minutes, 5 to 7 minutes once a week, science news summarized for you. So you'll know what's going on in the science world.
Yeah. Very good. Love that show.
Thank you
all for being here. We do this show every Sunday afternoon, about 3 o'clock Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time, 2200 UTC. If you want to watch, we'd love it if you watch live. We watch, as you can tell, we watch the chat room, and your feedback is always welcome via chat. But if you miss the show, you can watch or listen after the fact by downloading it from your favorite podcast aggregator. Do subscribe, because if you subscribe that way, you won't miss a show, and we like that. You can also, this is the only show I think we offer a high def version of, although we're working on it for the rest of the shows. It's just so big. I think it's like a gigabyte and a half. We don't want to kill your
1080p.
Caps.
We do 1080p.
No, stop
we do
it.
HD
come on, Leo.
On the
it's not that hard.
You do Game On in HD?
Yeah, on our separate channel.
Oh, on the YouTube channel.
Yeah, on the YouTube channel.
Oh.
I think depending on the editor, our shows can be uploaded to YouTube in the highest definition.
I think
definition.
We give you that choice.
Yeah.
But the downloads are where it's such a big deal, and that's we're trying to
1080p.
Deal with that.
thank you, everybody. We'll have Game On in about an hour. Do we? Yay. And then, of course, after that, Shut Up and Play, our LAN party, which will be a lot of fun this week. Maybe Kai will stick around for that. I would like that.
Yeah.
LAN party.
I got to get him involved in that.
Does he game at all?
Of course.
He's 1 year old.
Yeah, he's got his iPad. He knows how to play.
Does he have his own iPad?
Well, no.
He borrows mom's.
He borrows it. We have a nice shock absorber around the whole thing.
That's a good idea. He says, where's my iPad? Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the game.